Kindness. The seventh talk in a series on the fruit of the Spirit was presented by Ron Julian on August 6, 2000, at Reformation Fellowship. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2000. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction, all other rights reserved. A brief break occurs in the middle of the following recording. It is the result of the original audio tape switching to the second side.
What we have been talking about, we have been looking at the list in Galatians 5 of what Paul calls the fruit of the Spirit, the result of being a person in whom the Spirit of God is at work. And for Paul, at this point in his discussion, I understand him to be addressing, at least in part, a particular issue that often comes up when you're dealing with the kind of problem of legalism that he was in writing to the Galatians. And that is the idea that the legalistic perspective, that perspective that says you need to keep the law in order to please God and find acceptance by God, is the only sort of perspective on life that is going to promote goodness. If you tell people that they don't have to keep the law in order to be justified before God, then anarchy and license is going to break out all over the place. And what Paul has been arguing is that actually legalism, relying as it does just on the human heart, the human flesh, unaided by the Spirit of God, and based really in a falsehood about who God is and who we are as human beings, it just ends up promoting ungodliness. Self-righteousness, self-centeredness, judgmentalism, all kinds of interpersonal problems that result from being the sort of people that think that somehow God's on your side because you're such a good guy. True moral transformation, he is arguing, comes about through the Spirit of God, and it looks like the sorts of qualities that he's describing in this list. And therefore, if I want to live out the implications of being a believer in the gospel, these are the sorts of things that I will be pursuing. That's the sort of thing that he's arguing in this list. But most of our time has not really been spent dealing with the context of Galatians, but I've been trying to take us through each of the qualities in the list and get a little bit of a feel for what Paul meant by them, how he in particular used these words in other places, and what did they mean? What is he getting at? Today, we're talking about a fairly simple idea. The next one on the list, if I have been counting right, is kindness. Several of the qualities that Paul lists in the list of the fruit of the spirits are similar and work together to paint sort of a picture. And this is one of them that is certainly similar to some of the other ones he's described. Love, of course, is sort of the grand concept we spent 2 weeks talking about. I said the word peace, as it relates to our interpersonal relationships, was talking about the absence of hostility, being a peacemaker, refusing to strike back, ending the conflict, that sort of thing. That the word patience, as it relates to our interactions with each other, means long-suffering, hanging in there with the other person, not giving up on them, being willing to go the distance with them, that sort of thing. And now the word kindness, as I understand it, is a simple idea, but I think it's a profound one. There are sort of two aspects to this word as it tends to get used by Paul and others in the New Testament. One of them is kindness is working to accomplish a good result for someone. So to be kind to someone is to act toward them in such a way that I am working for their good. I am doing a kindness for them. So it emphasizes more than, if we talk about being at peace or forgiving, I might say, okay, I'm not going to strike back. I am going to withhold and not respond in kind. This word is more active The idea being that I am actually seeking to do good for the other person. I am working for their benefit. And then the other thing is that this word tends to be used in contexts where the good that I am doing in spite of the fact that I may have to overlook some weakness or fault in the other person. I am not striking back, I am being kind. This is certainly true when the Bible talks about God's kindness towards us, and that's the place we really need to start. With a lot of these qualities, really the reason that these qualities are so intrinsic with being a person of faith and with a person in whom the Spirit of God is at work, is because these qualities start with God. We are this way because we are coming to be like the one who has called us. And this is a big theme in Paul's writings, really, I think, influenced by much that we find in the Old Testament, God's kindness towards us. And the passage I want to talk about for just a minute is in Titus chapter 3, verse 3. Paul says, "For we also once were foolish ourselves, disobedient, deceived, enslaved to various lusts and pleasures, spending our life in malice and envy, hateful and hating one another." So this is Paul talking to believers here now. This is how we start out. We were fools. We were slaves. We were at war with each other. It may have been very polite war at times, but we're competitors. "But when the kindness of God our Savior and His love for mankind appeared, He saved us, not on the basis of deeds which we have done in righteousness, but according to His mercy." So, here's that theme. God didn't treat us the way we deserved. We were fools, we were enemies of God, and how did He respond? He responded in kindness. He didn't look at us and reckon to us what we deserved based on what we have done, but He chose to be merciful. And in choosing to be merciful, He rescued us. He saved us, it says. Our situation was bleak. And in a situation where we're lost, and we're lost because we are enemies of God, and by rights He could turn away from us easily, He did not. He reached out to us in kindness. And how did He save us then? He saved us by the washing of regeneration and renewing by the Holy Spirit, whom He poured out upon us richly through Jesus Christ our Savior. What did His kindness lead Him to do? How did He save us? Well, there's a lot to it, but part of it is He did it by washing us, by giving us a new birth and renewal. So we who were fools and enemies of the truth and enemies of God and enemies of each other, God overlooked that and through His Spirit washed us. And I think He's talking about something that has actually happened in believers. We're not talking about something that's going to happen one day. His Spirit is at work. The reason that we are willing to embrace the truth, the reason that we are actually willing to be here and try to learn what it is that God has called us to as people arises from the fact that we have been washed, reborn, renewed. There is a change that has happened. And so that's the beginning of God's kindness. He rescued us from our hostility to the truth that has us running away from God quickly in the other direction. He has called us to Himself. He has washed us and renewed us and justified us, made us right with Himself through what Christ did. He poured this out richly upon us through Jesus Christ our Savior. And probably, and for most of you, I think you know how I see this kind of washing and renewal. I do not believe that the Bible is teaching that at this point I have been freed from sin in the sense that it is it is possible for me to be perfect in this life, that I do not wrestle with sin in this life. That's not what Paul is saying. Nonetheless, a genuine transformation has happened through the Spirit of God. There is something truly profound and significant happening in the lives of believers. And what made it possible for the Spirit to do this? It was Jesus Christ, our Savior, who made it possible for this to happen. What He did on the cross made it possible for me to be reconciled with God. He is the one that made all of this washing and regeneration possible. That being justified by His grace, we might be heirs according to the hope of eternal life. So, this washing, this rebirth, a justification which accompanies it, I am right with God, He has accepted me. That is why He has washed and renewed me, because He has accepted me. And because of that, I now have a hope. I am an heir of eternal life. Before, I had no hope. Now I stand to inherit everything that God has promised. Okay. I want to talk again about this idea in a minute, but this is pretty familiar to us, probably. We have talked a lot in this series about these ideas, and we talk a lot about these things around here. But this, in a snapshot here, there's the picture of the kindness of God. You want to know what the kindness of God is? How has He been kind toward us? He has reached out to us, overlooked our folly, overlooked the fact that we are hostile to Him. He has justified us, He has washed and renewed us, and He has given us a hope that we are going to enter into a life that is really life forever. Notice that there we could, if we wanted to, split the emphasis here of this kindness. There is the kindness that God is performing in my life now. I have been justified. I have been washed. I have been renewed. There is something happening with me now. I am not waiting to be right with God. I am right with God. I am no longer under His wrath. And so right now, today, I have God at work for my good, the promise that everything that is happening in my life is something that God is working for my good because I have been accepted by Him. I am His friend because of what Christ did on the cross. So, and not even to mention just the everyday sort of kindnesses of God in sustaining my life and giving me food and friends and all of that sort of thing. Today, now, I am very much an object of God's kindness. And there is also this idea that God's kindness reaches into the future. Ultimately, His purpose is not just to make me feel better now. His purpose is to accept me so that He can change my circumstances, so that He can rescue me from this world and bring me into the next one. So, His kindness starts with where I am now and extends into eternity. In fact, there's one striking little passage I just want to quote to you that concentrates specifically on our future. In Ephesians 2:7, Paul is talking about the mercy, again, that God has shown us in Christ. And why did He do that? He did it in order that in the ages to come, He might show the surpassing riches of His grace in kindness toward us in Christ Jesus. So there we have an explicit statement that the kindness of God, in part, is this great outpouring of His riches that He plans to pour out on us throughout eternity. God has been setting this up and planning this whole thing so that He may shower us with His kindness forever. Now, just so that we can understand how serious all of this is, let me quote one more passage talking about the kindness of God. In Romans 11:22, "Behold then the kindness and severity of God. To those who fell, severity, but to you, God's kindness, if you continue in His kindness. Otherwise, you also will be cut off." Now, very sobering words here. He's talking to the Gentiles here in Romans 11. He's talking about the striking fact that this seems to be a time when, by and large, the Jewish people, the chosen people of God, have not seen the truth and not accepted the truth of Jesus as the Messiah. And by and large, the church has been made up of Gentiles, people who didn't even know about the Messiah before Jesus came along, didn't have the Old Testament, didn't understand what it was that God was doing in any way. Paul's talking about the amazing plan of God, and looking then both at the severity of God that he has shown toward those who have turned away in unbelief through his, ultimately through his purposes and plan, and his kindness that he has shown to the vessels of mercy that he has intended for salvation. So God's kindness, it's not that God is a pushover. It's not that God is kind of like Santa Claus, is the kind of guy that whoever shows up and says, oh, I'm just so happy to see you, Johnny, and I have a toy for you. It's not that kind of thing. God's kindness is in the face of real evil, real guilt. There is a real problem here. And some of mankind is going to pay. God is going to be severe. He is going to be just with us. We are going to get what we deserve. And then there are those, by his grace, that are not going to get what they deserve. And to them he is being kind. So, this is the picture of God that we see. If we talk about kindness as it relates to God, we're talking about the God who is holy and righteous and good in every way, reaching out to people who are not holy and righteous and good, overlooking that fact and rescuing them into holiness and righteousness and goodness forever. It is a great act of kindness that he has done so. So, when it comes to the fruit of the Spirit, it's not hard to understand the logic of this. We are learning to be with each other as God has been with us. And this is the theme that we find over and over. Jesus puts it very explicitly. But love your enemies, and do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High. For he himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. I mean, he just puts it right out there. God is kind to men who hate him. And we're not just talking about the salvation of believers, which is certainly the ultimate act of God's kindness, but it's also, Jesus talks about how God sends rain on the just and the unjust alike. The fact is that God is being very merciful to this world even now. The fact that it goes on and that people have the opportunity to live the lives they do is an act of God's kindness. Considering how much we are in his debt and how guilty we are and how corrupt the place is, every moment that he holds off from blasting us all is an act of kindness. And he does more than just not blast us. He keeps this place going and gives us an awful lot. So what Jesus is talking about is this active kindness on God's part. He does good for us. And so, if we're to be like him, then we're going to take the same attitude, seeking the good of others, even those who are our enemies. And I think the idea that God is like this, therefore we ought to be learning to be like this, is a very big theme in the Bible. It all comes down to that picture. Do I understand what it is that God has done for me? And I want to talk about this a little more when we get to the end, but Jesus said at one point, one who has been forgiven little loves little. And the idea that he was getting across there is that, you know, the Pharisees, for all of their piety, really didn't have a whole lot of gratitude towards God because they didn't really see themselves as having been forgiven all that much. But someone like an adulteress or the harlot who is forgiven for her obvious sins, Jesus is saying, she has been forgiven much, and her response will be a love towards God, a gratitude that is deep because she recognizes what God has done. Well, that's what's at the bottom of this. Do I recognize how kind God is being to me? And I want to talk about that a little bit more at the end. But it's pretty simple. I mean, I think it's pretty easy to understand. Am I going to be, I mean, the logic of it is simple. As I'm going to talk about here at the end, being this way is not simple at all. It's profoundly difficult. But the idea of it is simple. Do I understand or do I not what God has done for me? Could I dare to stand up and say, God has overlooked huge, horrible, awful things in me and has responded instead with kindness? He gives me good. He has not given me what I deserve, but he is giving me good instead. Could I dare to stand up and say that somehow I ought to be different when I deal with others? So there's kind of a what not to do and a what to do, the negative and the positive aspect of this. I think Paul captures them both in 1 Thessalonians 5 when he says, "See that no one repays another with evil for evil, but always seek after that which is good for one another and for all men." On the one hand, I am not going to strike back, but there's that positive emphasis as well. It's not just don't strike back, it is do good for everyone. Later in Galatians, Paul says, "So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all men, and especially to those who are of the household of the faith." Okay, now, I didn't want to... The logic of what we're talking about here, we have seen in several of the other fruit of the Spirit that we've talked about, and I don't want to belabor it. What I'd like to do is take a few minutes to make some comments about this, just kind of from a personal perspective. What's at stake here, and what sort of thing is Paul really getting at? The first thing that strikes me about this, and maybe I'm speaking from personal experience here, I think this is right. I think this is the picture that the Bible has, and it certainly is the picture that this is what I wrestle with. Kindness, as the Bible describes it, is costly. I mean, the worldly quality of kindness, and we talk about somebody who's kind, the kids in the neighborhood always go over to Mrs. Jones' house because when they show up at the door, she always makes them cookies and pats them on the head and "I'm glad to see you." Anything wrong with that? No, that's great. I'm all in favor of it. We all have a picture as creatures made in God's image. We have this picture of something we like. There is this generous response to other people that we respond to. And everybody has some part of them that wants to be like that. The problem that we run into is it's easy to be kind, or relatively easy to be kind, in those situations that are rewarding. Mrs. Jones goes away with a good feeling about giving the kids the cookies. But the fact is that a lot of the times when we are called upon to be kind, and the biblical quality of kindness, I think, in particular, I mean, think of how God has been kind to us. He has reached out to those from whom he gets no response. God's kindness is a costly kindness. Now, obviously it's costly if we're talking about the really hard stuff like loving your enemies and all of that sort of thing. But I think there are all kinds of examples of where we are called upon to be kind, where it costs us in some way. It can be inconvenient. It can be emotionally draining. I mean, this comes to mind for me because I really have to tell you when I stand up here and talk about this stuff that I'm almost afraid to come up and say this is what it's supposed to look like, because being a person like this is not easy, and it's something that I find myself wrestling with all the time. Now, it all depends. I mean, I would bet that because I'm a fairly quiet, generally easy person to get along with. I'm sure there are people who would charge me with not being easy to get along with every now and again, but for the most part, I'm I can sort of just go with it. So I don't think that people would be inclined to label me as contentious or unkind or anything like that. But when we talk about the real deal, when we talk about kindness as in seeing the other person's situation and making the costly decision to reach out and do well by them, that's a hard thing, and I find it difficult at times. I'm not a person for myself. I don't particularly begrudge people my time, so that's not hard if people want some of my time. Heck, I wasn't doing anything with it anyway, so you might as well get some use out of it. But the part that's hard for me sometimes is that the emotional drain of being involved in other people's problems. I mean, I'm at a point in my life right now where I could name all kinds of people, probably most of you don't know, out there in my life in one way or another that have all kinds of problems, terrible problems. I mean, awful problems. I can hardly bring myself to think about the problems. They are so difficult. And I have to admit that on the one hand, my response is one of pity and, oh, I wish I could do something, theoretically. But there are times when they want me to do something. And it's hard. It's just hard to do. There's this part of me, my first response is to say, oh, no. I mean, you know, surely, I can come up with a good reason. Well, see, I shouldn't do that because... See, that wouldn't be a good idea. That wouldn't be a good idea because, I'm not the best person to know or something. You know, I mean, you just kind of work it through. So, to me, coming upon this, looking at this description of the kindness of God and how we are called to be kind, this giving of ourselves actively to seek the other person's good, it really does hit me. It strikes home because I want to be a person like this, but I recognize that I'm fighting myself. I mean, there's a part of me that does not want to pay the price to be a person like this. So this is the first comment I wanted to make. I recognize that if we're talking about the biblical quality of kindness, we're not just talking about being easygoing. We're talking about, in various ways, being willing to pay the price, being willing to respond graciously, compassionately for the other person's good, even when it's tough and I don't want to. So I recognize the difficulty of what it is we're talking about here. The second point that I wanted to make was, I think that part of the reason that we find it difficult to be kind, that this quality is one that struggles to be born in us, is that we are wrestling with recognizing God's kindness to us. That is, I really do believe that there is a very deep connection between becoming a compassionate person, the kind of compassionate person that the Bible is describing, and understanding the compassion of God toward me. That the more I understand how great the compassion of God is toward me and how kind He is being toward me, the more I can understand the value of it as I'm dealing with other people. But I know, I get up here week after week. When I'm up here, I mean, how many weeks have I been up here when I don't talk about our hope and the cross and how we've been forgiven and the work of the Spirit in us? I mean, this is, you know, we talk about this every week. I recognize that there can be, I mean, actually it's fairly easy for these things to be somewhat theoretical. I mean, okay, Jesus died on the cross to save me from my sins, and someday I'm going to go to heaven, and, you know, those kinds of ideas, these vague ideas that have floated around in Christianity forever. In fact, no, I can't tell you that. I take it back. What I see in the Bible, someone like Paul, I mean, every one of them, Paul, Peter, Jesus, John, you name them, every single one of the writers in the New Testament writes as if these truths and understanding these truths are life-changing. Coming to be a person who sees the truth of this has a transforming effect on the way we live. And I believe that that's true. But what that means is then that the process of being a Christian, of living out the Christian life, is one of moving by the power of the Spirit of God, by the work of the Spirit of God in us, but nonetheless through thinking and struggling and wrestling, moving from the place where these truths are theoretical to the place where they are mine, to the place where I am actually operating as if they're true. You know, in the midst of my difficulties and my struggles, I lift up my head and my eyes are on the horizon and I say, I am being taken there and there is where I want to be. I really believe that that's what the Christian life is about, that there isn't another one, that that's the struggle we face, that that's what being a believer in this life is about. And so the fact that we I think sometimes wrestle with this, whether we're going to be kind to other people, is the place where we are wrestling with that question of whether God's kindness really means anything to us. I don't know how to bring it home, to make it move from the theoretical to the real, because I think ultimately another person can't do that for us. If I were more skilled as an orator, or maybe I should say if I had skill as an orator, I might be able to really rouse your emotions and get a real big picture here this morning of the kindness of God. But I could write, you know, if I were a skilled author, novelist, I could write a novel that you could read, and I'd have you weeping at the end with you know, emotionally overwhelmed by all sorts of, by the kindness of God and any number of things. But it only lasts about a half an hour after you read it, and then you're back in your life, and you know, that doesn't, it was just a story. And if I come and just tell you a story here, then I might be able to really rouse you with the story, but if it's just a story, then we're all going to go away and it's basically going to be the same. I can keep reminding you, and that's what I try to do because I feel the need to be reminded myself. But basically, what I believe is when we leave here today, we are going to go and live out the plan of God for our lives in this world. And that plan is for us to bump into reality in a big way and have to wrestle with the big questions about what do I really think is going on. I mean, that's what it's about. Whatever it is you think you're going to be doing this next week, in fact, what you're going to be doing is wrestling with the question of your personal destiny. What is it that I think is true about life? What is it that I think is good? Where is good to be found? Everybody's looking for good. Everybody's looking for life. And the question is, where is it? And you and I each, individually, with nobody else to do it for us, are answering for ourselves the question, where is it? Where is it to be found? The Spirit at work bringing the fruit of kindness in us, I think, is a result of the maturing of our faith in such a way that the truths of the gospel really are starting to mean something to us. And in particular, I am getting a feel for how kind God has been to me. You know, we naturally have that sort of response in dealing with each other. You know, if you had, in a time of financial difficulty, come to me and given me, you know, $1,000 or something, the next time I'm called upon to do a favor for you, I'm probably going to remember that. It's in my mind. It's a part of my sense of things. I would feel like an incredible jerk if I was to turn away from doing a simple favor for you when you were so willing to be gracious to me. I mean, we understand that kind. Not that we don't do that. Not that we don't actually indulge in that kind of ungrateful behavior, because we do. But we all understand that. There's this sense that we have that surely I can do this if this other thing is true. Well, that's what happens when the reality of God's kindness comes to us, I think, is that we start to understand. That's why the Bible so often talks about how I respond to other people as being how I respond to God. I'm not obeying my boss, I'm obeying my God when I respond graciously and obediently to my boss. I mean, the question is, who do I think I'm dealing with? Who in the end am I responsible to? Who is it that is in charge of my life and working for my good? The more I understand that God has been kind to me, the more the interactions that I have in the world around me start to, I do them in the light of that understanding. So, that's why for me, I mean, you all know this about me, but if I'm going to talk about kindness, Paul's thing about kindness, I don't come here and just say, I think you all ought to be kinder to each other. I do think that you all ought to be kinder to each other. But those kinds of admonitions in and of themselves, okay, that's great, good, go be kinder. But I don't think that's the way the Bible exhorts us. The Bible exhorts us by saying, remember what is true. Remember what God is doing for you. It is when I understand how kind God has been to me that I understand why kindness makes so much sense. Kindness, goodwill, compassion, working for the other person. So that's the arena. That's the place where we're wrestling. Yes, I am wrestling to be kind, but really I am wrestling with the question, how big is the gospel in my life? How much does it mean to me? At least, boy, I see that kind of logic just about on every page of the New Testament. The third point that I wanted to make, in this context, Paul, I think, is particularly contrasting kindness as a fruit of the Spirit with some of the results of the flesh that he describes earlier on. Enmities, strife, jealousy, anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying, all of these interpersonal tensions. And in particular, in this context, I think he is contrasting this kindness with the response that the self-righteous and the legalistic person would tend to give. This sort of kindness, this graciousness and compassion and acting for the good of the other person, tends to be at odds with the mindset that develops from legalism and self-righteousness. And you can start to understand why, I think. Self-righteousness is a lie. And the kind of lie it is attractive because I have changed the picture of God and myself and everybody else. Okay, I give lip service to the idea that God is being gracious, but I don't actually have a huge picture of God being gracious. My big picture is God is giving me my due. He has asked for obedience, and I have given it. And because I have given it, I'm getting what I deserve. So, in a sense, I am not the object of God's gracious kindness, but He and I have entered into this contract. Give me some obedience, and I'll give you some salvation. And I gave it, and I'm pretty happy about that. Where does that leave me and you then? Well, I hate to tell you, but I'm doing it. I'm keeping the rules. I'm obeying it, and I don't know that you are. Doesn't look to me like you are. So I'm happy with me because God's happy with me. I can't be so happy about you. Doesn't look to me like God's happy with you. There's something very attractive about self-righteousness because it is a way of artificially leveraging myself up using you as the lever. Your lack of propriety, your lack of keeping these rules is a lever I can use to get myself up high. Well, it's awfully hard to be using my contempt for you as a lever to make myself feel superior and treat you with compassion and kindness at the same time. The two just don't tend to go together. I can justify my behavior to you. I can say, I'm being kind to you. I'm being loving to you. I'm pointing out to you how screwed up you are and how you had better be like me. Because if you see, I'm happy and God likes me. So if I point out to you that how you should do things the way I'm doing things, then you can be happy too. And you and I both can look at other people with contempt. So I'm being gracious to you. Now, obviously, this is not the explicit thinking of the legalist. This is the implicit thinking of the legalist. That's what the Bible is getting at. So the self-righteous ultimately can be condescending, but they can't be gracious and they can't be kind, not in the way that the Bible is talking about. So part of the kindness that Paul is getting at here has to do with being... In fact, I didn't read it. There's a passage that he... where was this here? Did I take it out? I must have taken it out. I can't remember where it is. But there's a passage where Paul talks about how we should be kind and tender-hearted, forgiving each other just as God has forgiven us. That idea of seeing in the all-too-obvious flaws of other people something to be compassionate over. I recognize it in myself. I recognize how gracious God has been to me, and I have a certain compassion for where you are. I understand what it's like to be a foolish, self-destructive sinner who brings hurt into other people's lives and your own life, because I'm one of those. And God has been gracious to me, and I have this great hope that I am being rescued from being a person like that, and that gives me the space to have a certain tender-heartedness toward you, to be open to the idea that you have a problem, and I would like you to find a solution. The quality of kindness that we're talking about here has a lot to do with that, having a certain humility toward myself that allows me to feel compassionate towards other people. Now, part of the reason I wanted to emphasize this aspect of the difficulty of being kind, that legalism and kindness really are at odds, is that the last point I wanted to make was that it seems to me that Christians in our culture do not have a particular reputation for being kind. If this is supposed to be the fruit of the Spirit, and I were to go out on the street and say, this is the fruit of the Spirit, this is how you know a Christian, somebody in whom the Spirit of God is at work, there are an awful lot of people who would laugh and say, you got to be kidding me. And I wanted to talk about that for a minute. It seems to me, well, first of all, of course, there's a great irony in the fact that we, in general, as Christians, would be charged with being the very opposite of what it is we have been called to be. The other day, I, for the first time, was introduced to a song by R.E.M. I don't know how many of you know the group R.E.M., but this is not a Christian group. And most of the time, R.E.M.'s songs are not problematic for a Christian to listen to because it's almost impossible to figure out what they mean. Michael Stipe as a songwriter goes for the kind of easy flowing, I don't know how many of you have ever heard it, but basically it seems to be recounting Michael Stipe, the lead singer of REM, is gay. And it seems to be recounting an episode where he's on a talk show of some sort. And I'm not sure if it was a Christian talk show or something like that. But the song starts out basically, I don't remember exactly how it starts. It's basically something like, if I told you that I loved Jesus, that would be a lie. That's not true. But he did say some really cool things. Like he said, judge not, lest you be judged. And unfortunately, the people that follow him seem to have forgotten all about that. Have his lambs gone astray? And that's the... What's striking about this song is it's the only song of R.E.M.'s that I have ever heard that you can understand immediately what it is he's talking about as soon as you hear it. And then he goes on to recount this episode with seemingly... He describes himself as trying to explain himself and people won't listen and all of this kind of thing. So that song is, he described the song as being one of his favorites. And it's fairly clear where he's coming from. The song is a great indictment against us as being judgmental. We follow the one who taught us not to judge others, and we of all people are the most judgmental of all. So much so that, you know, he's basically saying, I don't want to have anything to do with you. This is bad, this is evil, this is hurtful. What kind of response do we have to that? What do we think about when we hear something like that? Well, it seems to me that it's a complicated question, because part of what is being charged against us, I think, as Christians, is unjustified. It is, we live at a time when, in our culture, the very act of believing that someone is wrong is considered to be an act of hostility. I mean, the concept of tolerance that we are have been developing in my lifetime, as I have watched things go along, we have come to the place where, and maybe some of us have not noticed that it's happened, but the fact is that to come to the belief that a certain way of life is wrong, was a wrong choice, that God would call us to something different, the very decision that is so is interpreted to be hostile. It makes me feel bad. I don't want you to think that of me. It is hateful. You're a hateful person if you think that I am wrong in this. So, if we're going to understand kindness and a lack of judgmentalism and so on as you do for me what I want, which is I want you to approve of everything I do so that I don't have to feel uncomfortable, then if that's our definition of being kind, then Christians are unkind and they always will be. Jesus was unkind. Jesus was not a kind man. He was in the face of everybody that he talked to. It's hard to find an interaction that Jesus had with anybody, including his disciples, including the disciple that he loved. John is described as the disciple that he loved. He gets on everybody's face. It's not a question of kindness is not saying things that make people feel bad or uncomfortable. Jesus said things that make people feel uncomfortable all the time because we need to deal with the truth. So to the extent that our culture, and even parts of the Christian culture, unfortunately, have defined kindness in terms of not ever thinking or saying anything that makes me feel uncomfortable, then we can't go there. And we're not going to fit in, and we're going to be perceived as judgmental. But that's not the end of the story, I don't think. Because I think part of the part of the complaint that is made against us is justified. If we look at Christianity as a phenomenon out there in the world, as I said before, self-righteousness and kindness can't go together. I have to decide, am I unworthy and an object of God's mercy and kindness? And am I going to deal with you as a person like that? Or am I a person who got my act together, getting the good stuff that I deserve from God, and I'm going to deal with you on those terms? I've told this story before. I'm showing my age because this is from many years ago, and there are probably hundreds of examples more recent. But the one that really got my attention years ago was back when Anita Bryant was doing her campaign in Dade County, Florida, for some anti-homosexuality laws. And it wasn't her, but at a particular news conference, her husband sort of came up to her and put his arm around her and kind of looked out at the crowd and said, "This is what us straight people do." And there was something about the smugness of it that was so repellent to me as a Christian. I mean, I was not unsympathetic with what was happening here, but there was something about that, a kind of self-satisfaction in that I think the world around us is right to respond to as being ugly and unkind. Somehow, I mean, this is the thing. You may have noticed that in the question time here, almost every week, somebody has raised the question of how do we balance being a peacemaker, being at peace with people, being patient with them and long-suffering, loving them, and yet holding out for the truth and telling people when things are wrong and that sort of stuff. How do I put those two things together? Can I put them together? And here I think it's just another one of those places where we bump up against that. That out in the world, as we're dealing with the evils of the world around us, on the one hand, we are called upon to stand up for what is true. We can't just back down and let the world around us define goodness in a way that is out of touch with reality. It's not good for them, it's not good for anyone. And yet, we are called upon to do it with kindness. Now, we're going to talk about this theme more because we're coming up, one of the qualities we're going to be talking about is gentleness or humility. And I want to really emphasize that when we get there. But the idea that we're bumping up against here is genuine Christian kindness results from the Spirit of God making it clear to me in my heart, in my will and decisions, that I have had a very, very, very serious problem. And God has reached out and solved the whole thing. In a way, He's asking nothing of me. I don't have to prove myself worthy. He's just done it. Here it is. Problem solved. And my problem was so great, and the magnitude of what He has given me instead is so wonderful that it's mind-boggling. If I get it, if it's coming home to me, what it is that this is about. That's what the Spirit is doing in us, but this is what we wrestle with. The Spirit doesn't just zap me with it. He does it in the process of my wrestling with the decisions of my life. So, what we're called upon here to do is to remember the greatness of what God has done for us and to act in the world in keeping with that. I'm going to speak out against evil because evil is the great corruption of the world, the great killer of the world. There's no place for it. There's no justification for it. We need to be clear about what is wrong and what is right. And yet, I want to be gracious. I want to be kind, the way God has been kind with me and the way God is kind with everyone in the world now. I want to be like God. I want to respond, whether it costs me or not, by seeking the good of the people that I deal with. And let me just finish by emphasizing again, I'm talking to myself as much as to you. I would like to be a person like that. I hope that sometimes I am, but it is hard. Because I'm kind of into me, you know. I'm a big fan of mine. And actually, I have a hard time sometimes being as big a fan of anybody else as I am of me. And that makes it hard to be kind. But that's what we're called to. Okay, rambling on as usual. We have a few minutes for any questions or...
I'm just hoping this makes sense, if I've thought it through enough. But I appreciate what you said about kindness and thinking about how God is kind to us when, and kind to people who aren't... He doesn't get anything back from that a lot of times. And then I was thinking about just a few experiences I've had of being kind to someone who... Actually, apart from it being hard, like you were saying, to be kind and go through the emotional stuff, I've gotten back friendship, or, you know, they've liked me, but I haven't seen any, even if I've told them what I've known about the gospel, I haven't seen them understand,
right.
or they're still misunderstanding as far as I know.
Right.
And I've had a couple of friends who've died fairly young, you know, and so I never know what...
Right. Right.
What happened there. But, and I don't know how God looks at all that, but I guess he's kind to everyone, no matter what they understand or not. And I know that's just been in my life, trying to figure that out. What's he teaching me here when I have a friend like this? And
right.
I don't know what they understood.
Yeah.
But is that why I'm being kind to them, so that they'll understand? I don't.
Well, you'd like them to, but... I'm not doing it because it's a technique that's going to work on somebody, because the fact is God pours out his kindness on the world and most of the world pays no attention. So it's not going to be surprising that I might actually exercise a godly act of kindness inspired by the Spirit of God in me, something that I would not have done before, I do now, and it may not have any effect. I mean, God's done a whole lot of better stuff than I have ever done, and people manage to ignore him, so no reason why it should necessarily be any different for me. But if it, the act of kindness itself is worthwhile. I mean, it is a good thing to do. A good thing happened that a kindness was committed for that person. I mean, on their side of things, it was good. It didn't save them, but it was a good thing. And on the other hand, it's always this arena, the word arena I use a lot because that's the way I picture it. The world that I live in, my little life, is this arena in which I am working out my faith. And I have as much to learn in those situations where people that I deal with do not respond in the way I would like them to, maybe more to learn in those situations than I do in those situations where they respond in the way I want them to and everything goes great. So I shouldn't be surprised that things would be messy. I really should add at the same time that I also shouldn't be surprised that I would go through circumstances and do things and have experiences where I couldn't in the end tell you why it happened, or even what I learned, necessarily. I mean, maybe I didn't learn anything. Maybe, I mean, at least to my knowledge, God is not in the business, necessarily, of telling us everything, the reasons for all of the stuff he takes us through. But I think that's a good point. It would be good for us not to go into those kind of situations thinking, I'm going to do this because this is going to work. And if it doesn't work, then maybe I didn't do it right, or what's the problem, or what did I learn so I do it better next time? It's not that. I mean, I'm called to do it because I'm called to be a person of faith. I am working out my faith, and I have compassion on that very real person that is in front of me, who is a real person with a real will of their own that I ultimately can't get in and do anything about. So I am following God in being kind to a significant person. And where it goes ultimately is not in my hands, I think. I don't know, maybe that's different. Maybe sometimes we, in our teaching, we sort of get the idea that the idea of being kind is because it's going to have a certain effect. And I don't think that's...
The grandma with the cookies.
You know, I saw you. I saw you. When I said that, I saw Miffy looking at me, and I said, Miffy's going to say something about this when this is done. Okay, go ahead.
To me, that's a kindness that we can't throw away. I mean,
right.
You know,
right.
That has a place.
Yes.
In my thinking, that's a kindness that you humanly can control.
Mm-hmm.
You get to end it with a bow and the
right.
package looks pretty.
Right.
Not saying that that's still not kindness,
mm-hmm.
but it has a lot of human control to it. The other kind of kindness that you're talking about is so terrifying because it's so out of your human control.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody brings somebody into your life that needs you,
yeah.
and several years ago this happened, and for over a year this woman I would work with, I mean every night or several evenings a week, I felt like she'd gotten the very best of me, my most kind part of me, and it ended really horribly. It ended with her being very hurt by me, and I remember saying to Mike at the time, fine, I am never opening myself up like that again if it's going to hurt somebody. And it took me about 2 years to realize, first of all, that person came back into my life and said, I'm sorry, I was so hurting myself, I was kind of involved. But the kind of kindness that you're talking about, when you don't want to do it, that it's not a pretty luncheon that you can put a bow on, is you're really only a tool. I mean, and God's going to lay you down when he's done with you. And you don't get to see the pretty ending, or you don't get to have that really good feeling. And you have to be willing to go through that process.
Yeah.
And it's not as, sometimes that kindness doesn't give you any good feelings.
Yeah.
But it was still necessary.
Right.
Is that what...
Yeah, no, I think so.
Other side of kindness, given that God's kindness is shown, I guess, generally in the rain falling on the just and unjust, and in Jesus' work on the cross, and then more specifically and individually in his bringing people to salvation through belief, I guess the world would perceive then or God has been perceived perhaps as unkind in that certain people aren't brought to belief.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's given rise to Arminianism and universalism and free will and other things down right. through the ages. How do you answer, the world's accusation that God is unkind and that he picks vessels for honor and he picks vessels for destruction? He has a choice to do either one, and it seems to be a sticking, an issue that crops up in history. There, people have tried to solve that problem in many ways. In such ways as I mentioned before, and I talk to people a lot at my work that seem to feel like that have given up on Christianity over that issue. It's just too big of a sticking problem.
Really, over that issue?
Yeah, that it seems too unfair. I guess that God would choose some and not choose others. I mean, the free will is kind of a handy hook for that,
mm-hmm.
To get God off.
since the majority, now I'm kind of intrigued by that, what you said there, because it seems to me that the majority brand of Christianity that's out there these days is pretty Arminian.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody would have, if that was the sticking point, it'd be pretty easy to find a brand of Christianity that doesn't put it in God's hands ultimately. Have they actually articulated that?
Yeah, issue? and whether they know the theology well enough in terms of, you know, maybe it comes across in the world more as you have to believe on Jesus.
Okay. Well, yeah. In a way, it does come down to that, because even if you could, I mean, obviously I'm not Arminian in my theology, but even if you go back there, you still have the fact that God has chosen to save only those who believe in Jesus. Why make that condition?
Right.
I mean, that's too hard for some people to accomplish. It can't get there, so why not just save everybody? I mean, which is the universalist sort of stance. You want me to answer this question? Well, I can tell you what makes sense to me at this point. As much as it is difficult to deal with, it seems to me that the concept of justice is a hugely important one when we're dealing with God. I mean, that's why something like the cross in the first place, this, you know, propitiation and all of that sort of thing, why not just say, oh, okay, you know, you guys, come on in, you can just come into the kingdom and we'll start again. Clearly, in the very nature of God Himself is this holiness, this sense that things, there is no room for, there is no place for rebellion against what is right and good. And yet, there is this other part of God's character, which is the expression of His mercy, that it is, there is something right and good about being merciful. I don't think that, I mean, I just have to understand the Bible to be saying that mercy is not the sort of thing, though, that is obligated. That is, I mean, we get in this spot. If mercy were obligated, then it's not really mercy. It's justice. Yeah, and the very quality of mercy is that it is going this extra step, that justice is appropriate. There is something right about justice. Something needs to be done. So God is not remiss. If He had chosen that everyone, people debate this, I know, but let me just say as a starting point that at least in general terms, God could have chosen that everybody justly pay for their transgressions, and there wouldn't be anything wrong with that. I mean, in the sense that if I am condemned for my sins, I can't stand up to God and say, you did something wrong. You were supposed to be merciful to me. And it seems to me that what we see is God has put things together in such a way that the cross is necessary because it is a way of taking justice seriously and yet being merciful at the same time. And so in the end, what has God done? When all is said and done, what do we see? We see God granting justice in this case, which was right and appropriate. They got what they deserved. And over here, God going beyond what it was necessary to do and acting in a way that He could take justice seriously and yet be merciful at the same time. And that both of those things are true. And in that, we have, there is nothing missing. I don't want to live in a world where God does not take justice seriously, but I don't want to live in a world where God is not merciful either. And what I live in is a world in which both of those things are true. Now, that can sound awful abstract for the particular person here who stands condemned, but nonetheless, in the end, I think it's something like that. Now, it's not my place to make those decisions. I mean, if I'm not the one who's going to stand up and say the world needs to run this way and so this person's got to go, I mean, that's not me. I'm just one of the objects of God's either justice or mercy. But as one who has been told a little bit about what it is that God's doing, I think the explanation of it lies somewhere back there. But in the end, I think God is saying to us, I am good. I'm holy. I am, in my character, everything that a being ought to be. And if the fact that I am just, in some cases, is a stumbling block to you, then you need to think about it some more. Your picture of goodness isn't big enough yet. And I think that's where we all are. We just kind of have to wrestle that through. In the end, decide whether God has given me enough reason to believe that he's good. He's just, and he's merciful. And I think that, in the end, that works. Okay, I think we're out of time. Thanks for coming.